I'm Pave, Sean Salisbury here. We're bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Unpaved. He is Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. You can follow the show on YouTube at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Please like and subscribe. Get all the notifications of when we go live every day at this time. Some quick show update. Coach JB will join us tomorrow. Had a conflict today. Join us tomorrow at the jump, right off the jump of the show. And then boxing legends Roy Jones Jr. should join us tomorrow as well. Probably around the 120, 125 mark Eastern time during the show. Sean, we got a lot to talk about today, but what a weekend of football. We had some really good football. We had some really bad football and a little bit of good college basketball mixed in there as well.
Yeah, we sure did, Sigs. The bad was really bad.
Really bad.
There's some that... But the bad that's been bad all year just reared its head and showed bad. There's some teams making improvements with changes, like a team like the New Orleans Saints. Tyler Shook's proven he can play.
Yeah.
He is. He's proving every single week they're getting better. He can play. New England, right back at it, doing their thing. College football, it turned out with the good on James Madison for continuing to battle in a tough environment and, you know, put up some points. Tulane and Ole Miss. The other two, I'm sure we're going to get into today, Sags, were impressive. It's just it was impressive in a couple other ways that maybe we didn't expect. And the resilience of a player to come back and as a freshman, he's going to be special as his career rolls on. And then the NFL, Caleb Williams, Sags, and we'll get into this too. I don't know how we can continue to deny that this guy, if this was a guy who didn't do the things that he does with the painting of his nail stuff, I really don't care about. We care about it when they're not performing. We don't care about it when they do, at least if we're smart. Right. Compartmentalize. You may not want to go out and have dinner with him if that's not your style, whatever decision we make. We got to start watching football and realizing what Caleb Williams is doing. If it was on most other people that did it, you know, he approaches things a little different, like in college and the rest of it. The dude's a big-time ball player, man. And to do what the Bears did, if you thought the Bears were fake, then you ain't been watching. This team is, what, 6 wins in a row, found a way to come from behind again and do it. I mean, it was friggin' impressive. Carolina doing their thing. I mean, we saw some really good football, and the haves and the have-nots are really starting to separate themselves NFL-wise. And there's some clutter as well. And the Kansas City Chiefs we know are done, so at least this year. So much to get into, but I was so impressed with the resilience of the – not playing hard. They played hard. But the execution of it for Ben Johnson's Bears team was phenomenal. And you want to talk about balls dangling down to your ankles on the overtime, taking that shot to end it and trusting a second-year quarterback to do that? Yeah, pretty damn impressive. So it was a hell of a weekend, and this is what I love because it's starting to – sort itself out at the top of this league, and you're going to get a Rams team that's going to get into this thing and get into this thing as a wild card more than likely, which is crazy.
Yeah, let's just start there with the Bears. They win 22-16. Kind of an interesting game the way it flowed. Jordan Love got hurt early in the game, concussed on an Austin Booker hit. Bears couldn't really get much going. The run game wasn't the Bears run game we're used to.
They're kind of typical of them this year. I mean, Sanders was just kind of they've kind of floundered around at times. Right. Looked great. Looked bad. But they've always been able to hang in there. Fourth quarter kicks in, and they've been able to hang around.
Defense did what it needed to do. It wasn't particularly good, but once it got down in the red zone, they were getting stops. They were, forced to turnover on downs, forcing field goals. Did just enough. And I mean, even when the Bears screw up, they still managed to find a way because, they kicked that field goal to make it a 7-point game right at the 2-minute warning. They didn't get it off in time to be able to use the 2-minute warning as a timeout. That's what forced the onside kick because they didn't have enough, or they would have only gotten the ball back if they did it, made a 3-and-out. They would have got the ball back like 15 seconds left. So they do the onside kick. They get it. Romeo Doubs just completely misplays the ball. It hits him right in the hands. Bears pounce on it. Caleb makes a great throw because what was Jeff Hafley doing to the Bears offense so much late in that game? They were blitzing heavy and they were blitzing everybody time and time again. And Ben Johnson said at the podium after the game, we had a play called there at that last touchdown that Walker caught to send it to overtime, that if they blitz everybody, this guy's there. And then the other one, I think it was supposed to go to DJ Moore if they drop back into zone. So Caleb makes the right read. They blitz everybody. He falls back just enough to make the throw. And I think everybody in the stadium watching thought Caleb Williams threw that ball too far. And it was just a perfect throw to Jahdae Walker. And then you talk about the throw he made in overtime was just, falling kind of to his left as he threw that ball. And then just to know, as soon as he threw that ball, if you watch this highlight, you can't see it there. He sticks his hands right into his pouch, probably being a little cold. And he just knew, he was just like, that ball's perfect. Threw his pants in his pouch and just sat back and watched DJ Moore end the game. That was a fun game to be a Bears fan.
Yeah, Segs, I'm just telling you, man, if you're judging quarterbacks by how they play under duress and a team, the execution of an onside kick that you think, man, just – and the Bears did a great job down in the red zone. You kick field goals in games like this, you lose.
Right.
And the Packers kicking field goals. And then to be able to hit that play, they made some mistakes, some self-inflicted stuff, and then to make the throw that you think, is it going, bam, give you that chance. And then come back and get the onside kick and then get in position where you say, are we playing to get into – no, let's take a shot and end the thing right now. And then to make the drop shot throw that is your ball or nobody's ball. It just, he's doing stuff that when he came in as a rookie, we knew how physically gifted he was.
Yeah.
And boring before brilliance is actually the way this is supposed to be. And we knew about his brilliance. He did it backwards. He's always brilliant and has the brilliance and is still trying to figure out how to be boring. You saw the brilliant shine when you actually think, folks, that Ben Johnson's teaching what you saw Caleb Williams do. Nobody's coaching that. You hope you can. You hope when you call a play, it works. Sometimes it works different than it looks. You call a plan based on what you've seen all week. But the execution of it takes in these. You saw something special.
Right.
And the guy is built different when it comes to his skills. When the understanding of coverage and defenses, and it seems to be going quicker, it's progressing weekly. When the consistency of that matches the physical skill set, if Ben Johnson doesn't go to some other job, to the Dallas guy, he stays on this historic franchise and stays with the Bears, and Williams stays healthy. I'm just telling you that there's very few in the league when you combine arm strength, arm action, off schedule, feet, eyes in the back of his head, and pretty competitive son of a bitch when you watch him. You don't have to talk, but the guy who tells you he's competitive isn't competitive. It's the guy who, and if you can just sift through how, if you don't like the way he handles his nails in his purse, for those that it bothers, I'm just telling you, I want you to now, we'll put it this way. If this was performing like this, if Shedeur Sanders was performing like this right now, what would the world be saying?
Oh my gosh, it would be.
He'd be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
if, I mean, Drake May is performing like this, it damn near, we're putting him in the Hall of Fame, another big game. I'm talking about Stafford, and that his numbers may not be as gaudy, but his performance under duress is. And I can argue that throughout the season, they haven't had all their offensive skills as much as other has, as far as personnel, still growing into it with a rookie head coach. I'm just telling you, Sags, this is different, man. The Bears are different. This cat's different. And as long as he continues to play like this and elevate, you can see how players responded to his game. That's how you gain respect. It ain't 400-yard games where you get loose and looking pretty. It's this, getting hit, making a throw under duress, and having the balls to do it. Chicago Bears are real, man. And their defense stepped up at a time. And I know the Packers would have loved that. Malik Willis came in and did a nice job. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did
really good.
You can't lay the ball on the ground, though, right?
No.
Was it him? Who got under center and laid the ball on the ground? Was it Willis? I'm sitting here, the fourth down, laid it on the ground, and it was over. But I'm so inundated with how many field goals college and NFL missed this weekend to choke on their own doggone spit. And then and fumbles that cost them, like Tony in a game we'll talk about, and then to come back and believe in a freshman. You're starting to see that. But I'm just telling you, and Malik did a nice job. But you still didn't have your best player on the field, and it happened. But that's no excuse. That the Chicago Bears, in a slugfest and a fistfight, took care of their business and made three plays down the stretch that most teams won't make those type of plays in a game, and they made them in a handful of minutes. It was impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it's showing there in Chicago with Ben Johnson taking the job in year one. You're sitting at 11 wins with still two games to go. I mean, you could theoretically see the Bears be 13-4, the one seed. If the Seahawks were to lose one of their final and the Bears win out, the Bears are the one seed. They've clinched a playoff spot. They're close to clinching the division. I mean, and then you look at the Detroit Lions. They're 8-7. They lose to the Steelers. They lose Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn to head coaching jobs. I mean, Dan Campbell's tried to do as much as he can, but it shows when you get the right head coach, you have the right quarterback in. Like you said, the Bears are still tweaking that offense to get it to where Ben Johnson wants it to be. And that's when Caleb will be a 67-68 completion percentage guy. And then it's very scary, I think, for the league.
And when the running game becomes Gibbs and that group, when you can get Montgomery and Gibbs type, where you can win a game running it or throwing it, even if the other part's not playing well, you can still win, especially. And look what the Bears have done. Similar to Detroit, what is one of the Bears' strengths right now?
Run game.
And with the guys up front, too. Their offensive line.
Yes, their offensive line is arguably one of the best.
One of the biggest strengths in the league. Yeah. It is. And it's so you start to – when we talk about Detroit and Philly, what is the first two strengths we talk about all year long when Philly won the Super Bowl? Offensive line. The Lane Johnsons when he's healthy. And we talk about Detroit, dominant up front. That's why Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs can do their thing. When they're in the infancy of this damn thing.
Yeah.
They quite frankly don't even know how good they can be yet. But I'm telling you what, we're seeing flashes of it. And the biggest thing I gathered from this is how many guys would do what they did in that situation on a short down to take the shot. Now, fourth and one, you got to down there in the red zone to get the game in position to go kick it. But to come back and take a shot, guts to throw it, but guts to call it. It ain't like Brady been in the league 18 years or Aaron Rodgers. You say they'll make the right decision. Under that, most young guys are going to throw it even if it's not open. Well, had a little trailer. And then to finish. Take the shot's one thing. Finish it. To finish the throw. And he did. That tells me that's a coach who, when everybody else this offseason was saying, and even at times during the season, was saying, yeah, but Caleb's different. Everything's off schedule. Getting back to that boring before brilliance, he was brilliant before boring. He's learning how to play boring football. Throw the check down, dude. We say it all the time. Hit the slant on time. Great. Well, Ben sees that, and to trust a guy to make that throw and give yourself a chance. And I know some say, what do you got to lose? Well, who knows what you got to lose the game. It was a huge moment for God in the world to see, and boy, did he deliver. And Ben Johnson – Talk to me 3 years from now when they both can finish each other's sentences, and let's see how this thing goes. Right. No doubt
that's
about it.
That's when it's going to be really, really fun. I mentioned the Steelers beating the Lions 29-24, and this is where we should be talking about the Lions being 8-7 after losing Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn to head coaching jobs. We should be talking about the Steelers, you know, gaining a game in the division to try and make the playoffs. But no, we have to open up our discussion with DK Metcalf going at a fan in the stands, essentially grabbing his shirt, pulling down, and trying to punch him, it looked like, because now there's conflicting reports from both sides. The fan says he just called him by his government name, as they like to say, whatever his name is, DeKalen Zacharias, I think, or something like that. And that's what got DK so upset. And then Chad Johnson said he talked to DK, and there was a racial slur thrown in there. There was talk about his mother. Supposedly the fan dropped the C-tail about his mom's. So then he went to the stands to kind of take care of it. And supposedly he had previous run-ins with this same fan in Detroit while he was in Seattle. So, but just not a good look either way, fan or DK Metcalf. I know it's tough. You got to hold your composure in that situation, but sometimes fans do go too far. And, you know, if these fans get a hold of them, who knows, or if these players get a hold of them, excuse me, just like we saw the Malice at the Palace and all that stuff, stuff can go wrong quick.
Well, yeah, and you're going to get fans that do this think that wall of protection is going to protect them.
Yes.
And then when you get your ass kicked, then you want to sue, and everybody's mad that you got your – everybody's mad. Well, you can't go in and kick the guy's ass. Right. Okay, so I do not – I have zero idea what was said. You're going to get the two-way street, right? Say, I said this. He mm-hmm. said it was a radio. Of course you're going to get both, whatever that trigger is. I don't know what that feels like. To number one, say it to somebody as a fan, but on the other side, to be in DK Metcalf or anybody else who's had to deal with racial slurs, I don't know what that feels like. I don't. I know what it sounds like and been around people, yeah, buddies of mine that have heard it, so I can only go there, but I don't know what that feels like to have somebody say it because, you know, well, obviously, in case you didn't know, Segs, I'm not African American, or
I will write that down.
Note that. Yeah, note that. But, you know, we can say, oh, I know what he's going through. No, we actually don't. Okay. But the other side of it is you have to be smarter than this. One is, one of these times, I don't know if you're the fan, you've got big stones. If you want to do that and Metcalf starts walking over to you, I suggest you get to the third row so he doesn't come up there and do just that. Yeah, that's exactly right, because you're messing with that's a fight you ain't winning. Okay. Right. Sorry about it. That guy gets his ass kicked on the field, taking hits from secondary on a regular basis. And this, it's a different toughness. So just know your lane if you're the fan. If it was a racial slur, I understand not how he went through it, but why Metcalf would say, I've had enough, the frustration, whatever it is, Segs, to go over there. But DK can't do that, because in the end, that guy will pay nothing to DK Metcalf, and nobody will know or know anything about the guy or care. But everybody knows of Metcalf, and now some of the NFL is going to look into it and do it all. I understand from his standpoint, if it was a racial slur, how that must just absolutely suck. So I listen, fans that are assholes that ruin it for 80,000 or 70,000 others, I just can't stand them. Just get rid of the guy and say, if you're doing that antagonize, you just can't come in here anymore. But even through those, now I can tell you where he's not going to say that, Segs. He's not going to walk into a bar with Metcalf and a teammate sitting there and say it. Why? Because then he ends up having his face wrapped around the back of his head. Okay, that's not going to happen. So it's cowardice by the fan. But the 100%. Other side of it, DK just can't do that. The optics, you know, everybody's walking every step, everything. Because the only optics now that people are going to say, fans are going to say, what a bully. And I can't believe he did. And athletes alike, you just can't. I know there's a time and a place to address it, but sometimes we're fines or optics or the rest of it. I'm not telling him how to handle his business, but I do know this. Nothing can be gained for DK Metcalf financially, legally, or anything else. The guy's not hurt. It's not that big a deal, but, you know, let bygones be bygones and move on. And should the NFL suspend DK Metcalf? The answer is probably absolutely not. If they want to send him a warning or fine him and say, dude, you just can't go to the – or the team handles it interior fine. Don't make too big of where we're suspending for a game to go into a fan. Fans matter. Well, fans matter when they're not assholes, okay, and don't need a full-blown ass whooping. Now, if he just called him by his first name instead of the nickname, you know, the DK, then if he called him, if he knows it, I don't even know DK Metcalf's first name. Like he said, I don't know what it is. So if that is the case, then he's got to be – then he's just got to get out of his own feels and that. But if it was a racial slur, put it this way. You can't do it, but I do get it why DK Metcalf would be bothered by that. And these fans that can protect – most fans are – see the people sitting next to you, not bothering anybody. It's a game. You enjoy it. Don't make it miserable for everybody else. But there's always that fan that, quite frankly, needs his ass kicked, Segs. He just does.
100%.
But he just needs his ass kicked. But then, you know, all the sensitive athletes, you can't respond. And the truth is, for DK's career and for the team and for his pocketbook and for just legal, you just can't, regardless. I know that you're saying, well, please say that to me in a bar so we can handle it by ourselves. And even then, guess who's going to get the wrath?
Exactly.
Metcalf is, because he's bigger than him and strong. Well, you didn't shut your mouth and he'll come to the bar and antagonize DK Metcalf. Did it on the field. DK's just got to, and I understand the rabbit ears from his point if it is racist, but people are stupid all the time. You got to learn from other people that have been through that. You just got to turn the other cheek, point at him and say, man, I'll be over here having dinner afterward, whatever it is, right? Sexy, just because the optics are going to, even if this was a friendly conversation until he grabbed him, the optics are going to say, what's he doing over there to that fan, right?
Right.
And you know, but if you want to eliminate it, just you just can't do it. But none of us in our situation would know what was said, and none of us know, between me and you, what how effective or how much a racial slur, if it was that, hurts. But DK, even then, you just can't do it because you're going to get painted as the bad guy no matter what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, first off, his name is DeKalen Zacharias Metcalf. So DeKalen Zacharias.
Oh, there.
Why?
Okay.
But.
And if it was a racial slur, Segs, I don't mean to interrupt you. You know what? In truth, if it was, if you're in that crowd around him.
That's exactly what I was just.
I would prefer you guys to police this.
Stand
and you grab him by the bed. Yes.
Him say, get,
we're not doing that here.
Yes.
Save DK Metcalf from himself. And understandably so, if it was, this is all allegedly, if it was. Even then, you just can't do it because it affects you more than it affects that clown in the stands. But the people around him, and I know those the ladies couldn't really do anything, but there's got to be dudes around that, you know, I know it may be loud in there, but save them from himself. That's when it's like a locker room. I don't need a coach to come down and police an idiot in our locker room. We'll take care of that ourselves. And I would hope that someday, but, you know, fans, most of them are good. Alcohol and stupidity get caught up in it. Let's just hope we're past the fans yelling racial slurs in stadiums. I know we're not, Segs, but are we still dealing with this? Honestly, are we still doing this?
If that is the case, or, you know, like I said, like according to Chad Ochocinco or Chad Johnson, whatever he goes by now, he also said stuff about his mom dropping the C word and stuff. But you see this picture here and you see the mom and the kid that you referenced there sitting next to her. At least it looks like a kid in this picture. I mean, if you got a guy up there dropping these words, saying this type of stuff, someone needs to step in from the crowd
and
get security guard, whoever you got to get, an usher, whatever it is, and say, hey, this guy's saying some shit that's way out of bounds. You need to get him out of here. Yep. And there's kids here. Okay. This is the NFL. This is a family thing. In the end, you can't have guys like this. And he should be ejected from every NFL stadium. If he said those words towards a player, get him out and never let him come back.
And I need that dude in the red jacket, if that is the security. Get there quicker, man.
Yeah.
You're sitting there letting DK Metcalf handle it, though. You go handle it.
Yeah.
Watch this guy. Oh, just kind of look and handle it. You get over there and then turn. That's when you should get up, tell the guys to come down and get up in the stands and escort the guy out. Whatever also, was said. We don't have, and buying a ticket doesn't give you reason to drop C tails and talk about somebody's mom and racial slurs. I don't know. And you know what? It just you hate seeing that because the game actually should get more attention. And unfortunately, from an idiot fan that's antagonizing a player, and DK's smarter than that, not to have to go over there and deal with a fan that should. The truth is, you just got to stay away from it. We got to keep those out of the stadiums, and we got to keep players from doing that because somebody's going to get hurt. Because if it really broke out and DK had a bad day, I'm talking about who knows what guys go through, and he went up in the stands. That's a full-blown beatdown that nobody needs to see. Because we haven't seen the last of those beatdowns by a player to a fan. I'm just telling you. Again. Because fans have taken more liberties now than ever, thinking it's okay because social media.
I don't know how long, like, this went on, you know, for a good little bit of time that, you know, he said stuff to him and then threw the punt. Where is this Steeler teammates? Like, somebody should be over there being like, no, dude, come on. This ain't worth it. Let's get, you know, someone should be grabbing him by the neck and pulling him backwards saying, hey, don't, you know, cost yourself a big money or a suspension or whatever it is for some jackass fan. Yes.
You know what else you got to do, Six? You know, when security and those benches, there's guys standing behind the bench. The second he started to walk towards the stands in the middle of a game, guess what you got to do? You got to get between him. You got to say, no, man, we'll get this handled. And talk him into a point. Say, man, we don't want you to get into any trouble.
Yeah.
And shift it to the fan situation and get him out. I just don't know. I mean, I understand people buy tickets and people are spoiled and some are sensitive. If it wasn't a racial slur and you just called him by a name, I get all that. To me, can we just, without fighting in the stands, can we just go to a game, cheer, have fun, get after it? I just don't know why that's so hard to do. I guess I do because alcohol is usually involved, but in the stands. But you know what? When does it come? I know some fans say, I bought a ticket, I can do what I want. No, if that's the case, and you can also bought yourself an ass whooping. Exactly. I don't know, and we may never know exactly what was said, but DK's smarter than to know to go do that because it's just going to make him paint him in a bad light no matter what, because we'll never know what the racial slur was. Because if those are the only two that know, now somebody heard it and five other people come out and say something, eject the guy and don't ever let him back into a football game. You know,
exactly,
because he's never going to say that to DK Metcalf in a bar because he's not an idiot, right?
Right. So Lions lose. They're clearly missing something. We'll get into that later in the show.
They really are missing something. There's an extra advantage I don't think they trust themselves, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll also talk about the NFL playoffs and where things stand later in the show. But we got to get to Friday night, Saturday day and night. College football playoffs. We're finally here. I think you got to start in Texas with Texas A&M losing to Miami in the way that they did, losing 10-3 with Miami missing three kicks and some of them close that any college kicker has to make.
How do you trust that guy moving forward?
You don't, but you kind of have no choice unless you have another kicker that's been close to him. But yeah, you can't trust him moving forward. We'll see how that affects Miami is they have to face Ohio State in the next round, but Texas A&M, I mean, I obviously when we do our picks, I had Texas A&M written down that I was going to win, and then I changed it because of all the song boy talk and stuff, you know, just having fun with it. But Texas A&M, I mean, what a way to end such a positive season with two losses to Texas, to Miami, who some say that, you know, shouldn't have even been in the playoff, if you wanted Notre Dame, and you go out there and you lay a stinker at your home field in the first round against Miami and Carson Beck, who didn't even play well. I mean, what, he only threw for 120-ish yards?
Missed the guy right down the field on the right side. I told you I don't trust him yet. No. I trusted the other guy, and that hurt too on the other side.
Yeah, so I mean, it was just overall, it was a very good defensive game, I thought. They were really getting after these quarterbacks, but overall, if you're a Texas A&M fan, you have to feel sick about the way this season was going. And then Texas happens, which is, you know, one of your biggest rivals. And then you lose in the first round of the playoff. Like, you can give me all the bullshit of, oh, what a great season. Only the second most wins in a season tied with two other. Don't give me any of that right now, because we just lost to a team that we were clearly better than on our home field. And we only scored three fucking points. Like, get out of here.
Yeah, Segs, I don't give me the I know you'll go back and look at the tape, do your team awards show, the banquet and all that when it's done. A&M's the better team. Now we say that and A&M got beat, so they weren't the better team
right
on Saturday at 11:00 in the morning. I can tell you this, is the defenses were outstanding. We took the under, bet the under in the game, and rightfully so. The when it started out, the way Reed Marcel was using his feet to start this game six, I thought this is going to be a two-dimensional. He is going to torch them, Reed, on the on A&M side, but he was using his feet early and creating. I thought, man, he's going to be able to space this out. This is going to be difficult on Miami if this continues. What happens, though, when you lay it on the ground and you throw two picks, you let an average offense that had, when I say average, and they were average in the game, Tony, after landing on the ground, for them to rely on a red, on a true freshman to come back and make that play at the end is huge. That kid is special. And Fletcher running the football. Segs, when he a buck 70 plus on less than 25 carries, they were getting chunk plays, and his big run at the end, it was a phenomenal, his best game of the year. But those two things stuck out because Carson Beck didn't do anything to win you a game.
No.
Their defense, Miami's defense, did. And A&M, listen, if you're in A&M's defense, you're walking out that field, you're saying, what else we got to do, Matt? We didn't tackle Tony on the touchdown. And let me back up a little second. Well, what would have helped you keep him out of there, even with 10 points, probably would have pitched a shutout if Fletcher wouldn't have gone hog wild running the football.
Right.
Make sense? Because I almost felt like you could almost make them one bit because I don't trust that Carson Beck was going to string enough throws together to beat me, especially on the road at A&M at a home game. But they left that one on the table, man. And then the pick at the end, you give up 10 points, you expect to win. You give up 10 points on the road, you expect to win. You give up 10 points on the matter of fact, when's the last time in some game like this of this magnitude, a single elimination game, somebody gave up 10 points and lost in their building? Do the NFL, I don't care what, it's had to be, I mean, and it just, and good on Miami. They were, they did a hell of a job to stay with it and close it out. And to have the trust in Tony to put the ball in his hand when the game is on the line. Their two true freshmen go out and make plays out of their mind, one on defense and one on offense to finish out the game.
Yeah.
But it was a phenomenal defensive performance. But there is no lifetime achievement award because this was the best team they've had. And there sure as hell isn't any, you know, the Monday after or the next day you're saying, yeah, but we hung in there and played hard, right? There's no consolation prize. You got beat. And you had it at home. Disappointing. I expected more from the offense. But when you self-inflict and turn the ball over in a playoff game, even as poorly throwing the ball and as average as Miami was offensively, remember I said last week, Segs, a defense, the problem is when you find a defense that can match your defense, not in this game, in any game. You're a great defense. If somebody matches it, then it comes down to which quarterback's going to screw it up or turn it over, which offense. And you turn it over three times in a playoff game, even them giving up just 10 points, you've got a chance to win. And they took it down with a chance to at least tie it, and they got beat. Good on Miami. I just don't know if Miami's all-passing game is going to be good enough moving forward.
No.
I just don't.
No.
But we're going to get a chance to find out really quick.
Right. They're going to face the Ohio State Buckeyes. Bama comes back from down 17-0 to Oklahoma.
Shocked me.
Yeah. It just looked like Bama came out so flat. Bama came out, and it didn't look like they were interested in playing the game for the first little bit, first quarter and a half or whatever it was. I mean, it was pathetic the way they played. And then it was just someone plugged them in. Like, that's what it felt like. Someone plugged them in. It was like, oh, shit, we're playing a football game. Let's go. And then it was done after that. Like, I mean, Oklahoma stood no chance. Ty Simpson looked like that Ty Simpson we saw middle of the season. We're like, dude, this guy might be the number one pick. And then it kind of fell off a little bit over these last month or so, but he found it there and then boom, took off, and Oklahoma really stood no chance. And Mateer played well early, but he was never himself from the early part of the season before the injury to after the injury. And I don't know if it's because he was hurt or because things just weren't clicking, but offensively, like Miami, Oklahoma never had enough, I think, to compete for a national championship.
There's I didn't think either one of these teams watching this game were capable of getting to the national championship game. Now, the second half Alabama team looked capable.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, man, when they came out, got done 17-0 Segs, and I told you I thought with that they were going to score enough points to get over, even though we talked a lot about defense in the game, right? That was one. And that if you came out fast – and made them chase, And I also wanted to see, we talked about after getting your ass kicked by Georgia and the talk about DeBoer, how would they respond? And you said they looked like a team whose coach was leaving and who they couldn't wait to get to January. The offseason was here. And it's a playoff game.
Right.
Well, here's what happens when you drop a punt, when you miss a kick, when your quarterback throws a pick six, and you let a team hang. And from the late in the second quarter till through that third quarter, do you know that Alabama did not have a first down till 9 minutes to go in the second quarter? Yeah. It was playing out like we said. I'm gonna tell you, man, that damn we haven't seen, you know, Alabama's quarterback tear it up lately. He's been going through tough times. Oklahoma's defense will knock if you, and Alabama didn't run the ball that well. It was okay.
Yeah.
And they started out 17-0. It was like playing the script, like Oklahoma's defense is going to dominate this game. Right. That's why he played 60. And it ended up being a hell of a football game. But once again, whose offense made more mistakes? Oklahoma's. Whose defense gave up some plays, offensive pick six, but gave up plays in special teams? And think about this weekend in NFL and college leagues. How many special teams plays cost teams? Onside kick not recovered by Green Bay. Missed field goals in some games. Forcing coaches at times where they should kick a field goal to say, screw it, I can't trust this.
Right.
I can't trust this. And, Mateo, you're exactly right. The pizzazz for four quarters, the guy who came into the year that we thought, man, this guy's he's a tough SOB. But something either mechanically, mentally, was not sharp. I'm talking about consistency of it. Segs, the second when he came back from injury and in this game, because when you're up 17-0 and you got him by the short hairs, you can't let that happen. But it's a matter of play here, drop here, ball game over. And then Alabama did what they did, and it was almost like somebody said, "Hey man, you're getting fired if you don't fix this." You know, and the players like at halftime, like somebody came in and gave him the old. Here's what's going to happen if you don't fix this. I know that didn't happen. And they turned it around like they were – the sense of urgency didn't kick in till 30 – till that drive at the nine-minute mark of the second quarter to get it to 17-7 and then kicked in. And when you're throwing them the ball for a pick six and the offense doesn't have to come on the field, it'll turn it around. I still am not sure from what I saw for four quarters that either Miami or Alabama are national championship worthy, especially – on offense, because Alabama still has got it done. The run game has to be better consistently as they move forward, because they're going to run into teams that could score. And the physical. Now, I know Cristobal's team was physical, but they're going to have to get more from the passing game moving forward as well. So, but good on them, man. Good on them. There was some points scored in that game, even with good defense.
Yeah. And then looking at the other two games, we had Oregon beat James Madison 51-34. As we said, I thought, you know, Oregon would have the over themselves, which they did. And then we had Tulane just get beat down by Ole Miss 41-10. And it makes the critics, you know, that were so hard against this, you know, look right. And they were. And my thing was the whole time, like, we can't do anything about it. So, like, this is what we have. This is what we get. And, yeah, should they make changes? Sure. And we'll see how it works out next year with the more changes they've made of guaranteeing the Power Four conferences their champion is in. So we would have had Duke in here. So they just continue to get in their own way. But John Summerall, the Tulane coach who's going to Florida, talked about the critics and what was said before their game, and then this is after. So this is what John Summerall had to say.
Hey, John, been a lot of critics about, you know, James Madison and Tulane being having their place in the playoff. As you move on, and you're going to go to obviously to a Power Four program, I mean, do you think in the future of this college football playoff, you still these schools still deserve a spot at the table in the playoff?
I think we were our conference champion, and the rules are what they were. I think they should be access for at least one G5 team moving forward. I do. You know, I think you should have given the ACC, the American champion, an opportunity before the ACC champion this year, because we beat the ACC champion. So, like, Duke won the ACC championship. We beat them. So, I do understand the gripe by how we played tonight. We didn't help maybe the critics of that. But I do think there should at least be one G5 representative. But, you know, I'm not in charge of the playoff. I need to coach whatever team I'm coaching better than I did tonight. That's what I got to worry about.
I love this guy. I do. And remember 3 weeks ago when they called him up there, he said, we're not any good.
Right.
He said, we're an average football team. And he said it. This is before he got to Florida. We're an average football team. He is a realist. And he said, listen, and he's right. The rules say go ahead. Now, the argument against that, you beat Duke, but Duke was 7-5 and didn't get to the playoff either, and nor should they have. So, but I love this guy. And I think Florida, he's going to win at Florida. I'm just telling you, he is. This dude can coach. And he is old school real. I'm not kissing your ass if you don't show up and play. I get what he's saying about it, but once again, the rules are set up. I don't even want the conference champion having an automatic win, because just like we would have Duke at 7-5, and Tulane and James Madison could both beat Duke on a normal night. If James Madison plays Ohio State 10 times, they're going 0-10. If Tulane plays Ohio State 10 times, they're losing. They're going to be they will be down 0-10. That's when you say that, well, Sean, that means you can't stay. No, damn good programs, and who wouldn't want to coach and play there? But they're in over their head. Yeah, James Madison hung around and scored some points. I get it. But Oregon had that. Neither game was ever really close other than the opening tip, okay, like we'd say in basketball, the opening kickoff. We knew that a boat race was in store. I love Coach Summer. I do. And the resilience and getting your teams in, that's great because the rules allow. But I don't know why, and I know antitrust laws, because if you say only the Power Four can get in and you don't have a G5, Group of Five team or somebody else, that the lawsuits, you can't bully them into just, but you know what? Somehow we got to, you're going to sue over the fact that the 12 best teams weren't in it, that the 12 best teams were not in it. The rules set up, so play by the rules now. I'm talking about moving forward. There's no way on God's green earth Now, that year Central Florida, 13-0 said Scott Frost first time around Central Florida? I would have put them in a playoff as the 12 best teams. They earned it. They damn well earned it. Now, I don't know what the asking, but we've seen it. Hawaii, when they played Georgia, got beat down. Mm-hmm. And I understand certain years are up and down, but, and I will argue this till the cows come home for some, Duke fans, respect it, love you. I don't care if you win the conference 15 more years in a row. They win it next year, they're getting in at 7-5.
Yep.
Now, I want you to think about it. And John's coach is right. Well, they won the conference championship, and we beat them.
Yeah.
Listen, if Tulane plays Duke 5-10 times, they may beat him 6 out of 10. And that's why. I'm going to say it one more time. Are we picking 12 teams? Screw the antitrust laws and the people that would sue we're bullying because the 12 best teams are usually going to be in your Power Four conference. I hate to tell you that. Doesn't mean there's not a lot of the good programs. Is that the fact of the matter is that we're not getting our best football. Just put it aside. But I want a committee to pick 12 teams. Just 12. Give me the 12 best, or if you move forward with the 16 best, but the 12 best. It just, I don't know why. I mean, this is society now. We got to make sure everybody gets a trophy. It's Sags. AAA doesn't deserve Major League Baseball. I mean, to play against them in a playoff game like we heard last week. So, like Nick Saban said, I just don't like it because if you're one of the 12 best teams, and I don't need a conference champion because a lot of times a conference champion has a different schedule and they get, non-conference and they get in, the other team, and I understand that you're doing it by the conference schedule, not on conference, but we know that Duke didn't belong in. We damn well know that James Madison and Tulane should not, or North Texas had they handled Tulane, are not one of the 12 best teams in America. I don't know how you slice it, but somebody smarter than me has got to figure it out. It sure doesn't seem that hard to figure out. I'll deal with the lawsuit of antitrust. But you don't let the Group of Five guy in. Group of Five didn't deserve to be in the 12 teams this year.
To me,
or any year so far.
It's simple. I mean, we're sitting here, we're watching. I've been watching the FCS playoffs. I've been watching the Division II playoffs. Those are fun. Why not give us a G5 playoff? And then if there is a team, let's say Tulane is 12-0 and they're playing their ass off and they've beat a couple good teams that they happen to play in the Power Four and they deserve to be in the college football playoff, put them in. But if not, then
as a wild card,
the one seed in the G5 playoffs, if you want to do 12 or 16,
and FCS, give us another playoff. if you want to combine G, because I'm telling you what, Montana or South Dakota State or North Dakota State, one of Youngstown State, one of those, when James Madison was FCS, they would have given a group of five team one of those, just like a two-lane, all they can handle.
Playoff. If they want football that bad, give us more football.
Right. And Sags, you know what's crazy? Is it such a great and valid point by you. We go through it. We're not saying group of five is not allowed.
Right.
We're just saying you better do something extra special.
Yes.
And that means, and then it would lead into, okay, who do we schedule? Now you beat Duke. Let's say you scheduled SC and you beat them and you scheduled somebody else that's a Power Four school, a good, and you beat them. Now you deserve a wild card. You've won your games. You're 11-1 or 12-1, and your one loss came to a competitor in your own, but you hammered those three and you won. You were really good against three power. Now we're having a different conversation.
Yeah. Right.
But it's nothing against the smaller schools. It's just that we keep asking for the 12 best, and we still, every year we ask for the best. We didn't get the 12 best.
And why I think it makes more sense now is because all these bowl games, like you could put bowl games like G5 playoffs are certain bowl games, just like we do with the college football playoff, because these bowl games are not watched. They're, you know, the lower ones I'm talking about, the ones that have already been played, or the ones, I mean, I didn't even know we had bowl games at one point, and we had already played, I think, two. I mean, that's how down bowl games are. I mean, bowl games are closing shop. They're not having them anymore. They're switching sponsors every single year.
Well, players aren't even playing, you know.
Exactly. So if you have another playoff that you put 6 or 7, 8 bowl games as part of the playoff, maybe more people watch. Then your sponsors are paying more, and then it helps college football.
No doubt. And Dustin, you are so right. And Segs, you mentioned it, watching that football. I'm going to tell you what, when I watch South Dakota State and North Dakota State play in the past, or when I watch, you know, Montana State,
I watch that
damn good football.
Yeah.
It's friggin' great football, but just the simple size standing next to him, Montana State can't beat Ohio State, Miami, Texas A&M, and Georgia in a playoff. The attrition will take, they just can't. They may win one or hang around one, but they can't. So to me, you can't give tickets away to some of them, but I do want to watch Montana versus Montana State. I don't want to watch Montana. I know the intrigue, the upset, David versus Goliath. It's going to look great about 3 minutes in until Georgia or Ohio State start to go run steamrolling, and it's 63-10, and that's saying something against a good Montana or Montana State team. They're just overwhelmed. Size, depth, speed, all of it, it's just too much. Why can't you have an FCS playoff? Why can't you have a group of five FCS? If you want to combine them and have at the end the best team, however you want to group that, the group of five, as we said, and have a playoff. And if one of those group of five teams, like Tulane beat Duke, like you said, they beat two other great Power Four teams, now we can consider them putting them in. And they went from the one seed in the group of five championship. You know what? We got 2 weeks. No. You were voted in by the committee. We believe you belong in this. You're playing up. You're a freshman on the fucking varsity.
Right. We think you can compete with these.
That's exactly right.
We never thought that about
these teams. With it.
Hell, the coolest story in college football right now that nobody really knows about is my wife's alma mater, Illinois State. They're flying through this FCS playoffs.
They have
four losses. They beat the top team in the playoffs. And now they're playing Montana State for the FCS championship, and it's fun. They're having fun. It's a cool story. If you have that in G5, where maybe a team comes in that has three or four losses, and they're just like, oh, we beat Tulane, we beat JMU, and we beat North Texas on our way, that's a great story, and that'll be fun to watch.
And to see Segs, but here's the difference. The difference in I'm just using divisions. Mm-hmm. The kid who didn't get into Division I but played Division II is like the kid who was drafted in the fourth round of the NFL draft, maybe. Right. Wasn't good enough to be a first rounder, but man, was perfect case in point. Do we think that James Madison and Tulane are taking players to a Power Four school with their coaches? You're damn right there. To UCLA, to UCLA and to Florida. Sure they are. Because now you had them under your coaches. They developed, and how you re-recruited them, they're Power Four players. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. But when they play against each other, you're right. You can lose three or four games and then get on a roll. But even if you won them all and you were undefeated in your Montana State, you play and they put you, I'm just saying for fun's sake, mm-hmm. take them out of the FCS and say, oh man, you earned a right to come play against the big boys. They can go, they could have won them all and dominated. They play Ohio State, they lose 63 right. to 3 or 63 to 10. And it's not because they're not good. It's just because those guys now 3 years from now, and you might see a coach in Alabama say, you know what? That wide receiver you got at Montana State can play. I hope he transfers to us next year. We've seen that movie too. It's just the overall sum. You just can't keep up with these teams. Upset, maybe. There was never going to be an upset in the Tulane or right. James Madison games. There just wasn't, with all due respect to their program.
Yeah, so now we have eight Power Five teams fighting, or Power Four, I guess, fighting for the national championship. Sean, one last college football topic that I want to hit on, and it has to do with your Trojans. Notre yeah. Dame and USC failed to agree to keep the series that's been going since 1926. Notre Dame says, no, we're going to play BYU instead, and we'll maybe revisit it and maybe start playing again in 2030. I mean, I don't know if this is part of some team saying, maybe it's USC saying, no, we're not going to play you with all the kind of the bullshit surrounding you getting in if you're a top 12. We've heard this might happen, and we don't know which way it's really, really coming from. But BYU stepped in. They'll play Notre Dame in place of USC this year. It hurts USC because you lose a prominent, you know, fixture on your schedule, but you are in the Big Ten and you play nine games. So maybe it's smarter for USC to just say, hey, let's just go play Colorado State and let's win that game. And then we get in the playoff. And so it's just,
you won't get punished for it. Yes, you won't get exactly. punished for it.
You won't get punished for it. So just interesting, but it sucks because these are what college football rivalries are all about. It's about Notre Dame, USC. It's about Michigan, Ohio State. It's about Alabama, Auburn, you know, Florida,
A&M,
Georgia,
Texas getting theirs A&M, back.
Texas yeah. getting theirs back. Yeah. So, I mean, it's something that sucks to see as this game continues to change year after year.
Can you imagine the politics of the money getting involved in Army says, nah, we decide we don't want to play in that week. We're not going to do that. We're Army Navy.
We're not going to play the Army Navy game. Yeah.
People would be beside, and I would too. This is an utter embarrassment. I've seen both segs. It's Notre Dame's SC people are going to blame it on Notre Dame. Notre Dame people are going to blame it on SC. Also heard that the timing of the year when it's scheduled, that if it's later in the year like it used to be, when I played segs, we'd go UCLA and Notre Dame pretty much back-to-back, right? Yeah. Late, like in November. And at times that's moved around now, that game has to earlier in the season.
Yeah.
Is that late loss hits you harder than the early season loss. I mean, committee people just seem to forget. Do I remind you? I mean, we've seen it all the time. Well, we beat them, that was 8 weeks. You know, they try to justify, right? So I've heard that SC didn't like that. My son, Dodge, sent me an early morning message this morning, and I'd seen it, but he said, man, Dan, Dad, the game's canceled. They're playing BYU the next couple years. I said, he goes, that's one place my son's been to all the games at SC. He's never been to with me to a Notre Dame SC game. I said, he goes, man, because I wanted to go to that game in South Bend. I said, in two or three years, we'll go back. Because it's coming back, Sakes, because you just can't. This is an embarrassment, that grown adults sitting in a room because of the timing of the schedule, or somebody getting in when they play this game, or you don't want to get in here, or money prevents what is, when it's right, it's one of the three best rivalries in football. It just is. Even if you want to say five, okay, fine. Yeah. National rivalries, if it's not on your Mount Rushmore, we overuse that phrase, if it's not on your Mount Rushmore, then over the history since the 20s, then you haven't paid attention to college football and you're full of shit. Of course it is. And it's a great respectful rivalry, respected rivalry as well. I hate it. It was inevitable that this was going to happen, at least temporarily. And it's inevitable that it will come back and be on the schedule again in the next 3 to 5 years, whenever they decide. This is a 2-year thing with the BYU and the mm-hmm. playing one. I think next year's in Provo and the following year's in yes. South Bend, I think. Is that what right. it is? So, and you know what? That'll be BYU will compete their ass off. They always do. By the way, congratulations to my guy who's my generation, Tom Holmoe, who played at BYU, 20-year athletic director, has changed the whole scenario for the way we view BYU. We'll retire. He's retiring at the end of this year. So good on Tom Homo and best. Two guys in Utah, Kyle Whittingham and Tom Homo from two different places. Mm-hmm. But also Kyle and Tom know each other from BYU times as well. Yeah. So congratulations to him and Kyle as well. So, yeah, Segs, this is gut-wrenching. If this would have happened in the close to the football season, like we decided we were doing this in July, I'd have been sickened, right? I would have been so pissed. But we're kind of getting a little bit of fatigue. It's like, okay, I'll deal with that, and I'll be pissed at come spring and then heading into the fall. You just can't do this. I don't care what the reason. It's almost as if you got to have where somebody comes in and says, no, the veto. I got veto power. I don't care what you two do. You're sitting in that room. You're like a jury. You ain't coming out. We're not doing any hung jury here. You're not leaving that room until you guys get this solidified. We're not losing this rivalry because of your guys' incompetence.
Yeah.
So whoever did it, who's ever at the forefront of it, shame on you. And to Notre Dame and USC, shame on both of you in this situation because you cheated the fans and they deserve it. And if you're USC and Notre Dame, Notre Dame's committed to playing a good team, Power Four good team.
Yeah.
Who's USC going to schedule? And the way it's set up, why would you schedule a dominant team?
Sure not.
And that bugs me out because as a Trojan, I want to see somebody of Notre Dame equivalent.
You'd rather see your team in the playoff. And
if it comes down to Tennessee, Chattanooga comes to town and you kick their ass and you stay undefeated, I'm all in. I'm all in. So, it sucks for the fan base because once again, as I'll say it again, fans don't get a seat at the table. They never do. They got no say in this. But we're doing it. We love the fans. Your ass. If you love the fans, this would not be BYU getting in and Notre Dame having a little back burner game for two, which won't be back burner because it may have a great effect on the national title schedule. At least kudos to Notre Dame for scheduling BYU.
Yeah.
But my alma mater needs to do what they got to do. But the whole setup of this thing's an embarrassment.
I'm just looking at the USC 2026 schedule. They do play Fresno State and Louisiana are their non-conference games. So obviously they'll have to replace Notre Dame, but it'll be interesting to see. They do have a game against the Ohio State Buckeyes. That's in LA. They play Oregon in LA. So they got their two big games in the Big Ten. They do go to Indiana. I missed that one. So they do go to Indiana.
Think about this. If SC schedules, let's say they scheduled Colorado State, you said, and they win all their games, do you know that people are going to say, or they lose one to a good team along the road to whoever, right?
Yeah.
Do you know even in winning and they make the playoff, they're going to get hammered? Why? Because they'll say, look at that chicken shit non-conference schedule. That's how people will address it. So it's almost as if you need to schedule a Power Four team or one that you feel pretty good you could be. You know, but then again, remember, some of these already have their schedules played out anyway. So you don't know who's available, cancel and pay. That's exactly right. But sitting there now. So you go schedule another non-conference game where your three non-conference games, you should have scored about 150 points in all three of them combined next year. And then you get two tough games at home, it'll be inexcusable for USC not to make the playoff next year. Full-on inexcusable.
It's just crazy that the rivalry goes basically 100 years.
It's an embarrassment, man.
And then, boom, gone. Yeah. Before we get out of here.
We love the fans, Segs. It's for the fans. Yes. You know that. It's for the fans.
It's always for the fans. Before we get out of here, did you watch the Jake Paul-Anthony Joshua fight on Friday night?
Clips of it. It's what happens when you finally step into a real boxer's right there. Dude. Done. Broken jaw, too.
In two places. That punch right there broke his jaw in two places.
Much respect to Jake Paul about his grind and YouTube, and he's done it. But in a real fight that's not scripted or has that in it, against a boxer like that, you're going to – this is what happens. You take a straight right that knocks the shit out of you.
I've watched some of his past fights, the Tyson, or even go back to, I think he fought Nate Robinson. Remember the little guard that played for like the Knicks and the Bulls and from Washington that was 5'9" and could dunk like crazy. He fought him, I think, early in his boxing career, quote unquote. But this one was the biggest joke of all because he comes in being like, you know, I'm a boxer now. I'm a professional boxer. And every time he got swung at, he just went to his knees and tried to basically wrap up Anthony Joshua, who
it was Jeff Van Gundy. It was Jeff Van Gundy. And yes. grabbed
him. There you go. That's what it looked like, the way he just kept trying to grab him and take him down. I mean, I didn't know if I was watching UFC or, you know, one of these
WWE.
Yeah. Right? Whatever the hell was going on, but what a pathetic fight that was. But that punch that he took from Anthony Joshua, you saw it on his face afterwards as he's laying there. He's just like, holy shit.
Welcome to real boxing with a guy who's bigger than you, stronger than you, and can lay you out with one swing of the bat. Yeah. Right.
And you could tell, and you know, I'm not a huge boxing guy. Joshua hadn't fought in over a year, and he just, it felt like early on, he was just trying to size him up, and he took a couple big swings trying to size. And then it was just like, you knew once that round started, it was over. Like, he was getting knocked out at some point.
No doubt. Segs, before we go, one last thing. And so, yeah, he knocked him. I'm glad it wasn't gimmick for – he said, no, you're sitting there, and I see that jaw. I know you don't want to hurt anybody, but that was – you're going to be eating tapioca pudding for a long time. The last time I saw something – I'm back into Muhammad Ali. This is taking me way back. But I remember when he fought Ken Norton Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was Kenny Norton – not Junior, Kenny Norton, the dad. Senior. Yeah. Ken Norton Senior. I played against Ken Junior.
Yeah.
Ken Norton Senior. I'll never forget when he hit and knocked, broke Ali's jaw on Sports Illustrated. Because the Sports Illustrated cover used to be you'd wait for every week, Segs, right? You like collect. I remember when Sidney Moncrief was on the cover and the Three Musketeers at Arkansas, and it was like riding high on the hogs and had the shot at him dunking. Some of the great, iconic, you know, Jordan's been on like 8 million of them, Sports Illustrated covers. Well, I'll never forget, it had Ali was on the cover, and it said the jaw's broken, but the mouth lives on, meaning Ali still jaw's broken, but he can still talk it.
Still talk
and, you
that
know,
talk.
That's a 6-week tapioca pudding diet is what Jake Paul got last night. And remind, now he ain't going to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated, but that's one that you said, welcome to real boxing, man, with a straight right. Segs, before we go, I just got to go back one thing here real quick. You know how certain plays haunt you, and I'm not talking about a right in a boxing match. That may haunt him.
That will also get
you real skinny because you're not going to be able to eat fluids other than fluids of pudding. I go back to that Oklahoma game on the scramble by Mateer. I know he could have run for the first down, but the guy, I would have thrown it too. And to have that ball drop out of the hand, I'm thinking to myself, when you go back and think about all the pick six, the coverage fooled you, drop punt, miss this, miss that. When it really ended up 17-0, but that's one he'll be able to describe that, the receiver and the quarterback, 20 years from now. That'll be as vivid as it is, because I mean, you never know where the momentum of that game goes. Hits you in two hands, you got to catch it. That's one that you can have a Hall of Fame career, and you'll know, you always remember the one that got away.
Yeah.
And you never know when you're going to be back hosting a home playoff game.
Yeah, you don't know.
And a ball that he would catch with his eyes closed. Yeah. And he left it on the ground. That's tough. It was Alabama's night in the second half. They took care of it. I still don't think Alabama will be standing when we get to the final, because their offense still, to me, consistently isn't impressive enough, which is shocking because their quarterback's a good player.
Yeah, we'll start breaking that down as we get closer to those games. But before we get out of here, we'll have Coach JB tomorrow. As you know, today just had a conflict. We'll have Roy Jones Jr. about, what did you say, about 1:25-ish Eastern time.
Yeah, get JB on and roll in.
Get him on after JB. And then we'll talk NFL playoffs, where things stand right now. You know, you got the Bears in the 2 seed. You got the Seahawks at the 1 seed after their win on Thursday night over the Rams. You got the Rams at the 5 seed. Who are as dangerous of a 5 seed as maybe we've ever had in the NFL. And we'll talk about Shadur. I thought he played decent against the Bills. And then after the game, he showed me something as well. I want to talk about that.
He's growing into it, maturing. No doubt
now
about it.
Will he be the quarterback that's needed to be the franchise guy for the Browns? That's still a wait and see, at least in my opinion. Talk about the Chiefs. Gardner Minshew tears his ACL now. Now they're to a guy that I don't even know how to say his name, throwing the football all around.
Uncle Rico. That's what his name
is. Uncle Rico is now the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. And then the biggest game of the week next week, the Giants and the Raiders, the two worst records in football, will face off this week. Basically, you could argue for the number one pick. Who wants the number one pick more? Who will try and lose?
I'll tell you what, Sunday. The Texans tried to give that game away yesterday.
The Texans are okay. That's another topic we need to hit on that I don't have written down.
Can you imagine that offense, losing that game?
That offense sucks. I'm just straight going to say it now. I've tried to give it time to see if it would build up.
Oh, you're right.
And they started playing well. They're winning games. I don't want to take too much from them.
Seven wins, six or seven in a row now, Sig. Something like that. Seven maybe
that
in a row.
That defense is so damn good, and that offense sucks. I know they didn't have Woody Marks, but if Woody Marks makes the difference in your game, then you suck as an OC and your quarterback's not good enough. And I'm starting to think that about CJ Stroud.
You know, the one thing that the Raiders, Oakland, the Vegas Raiders did just finally, they hand the ball to Genty and he made big plays, throw it to him, hand it to him. Good things happen. It's pretty, pretty novel concept, but boy, what a hard watch my Raiders are.
A
hard watch. And you're right about the Texans. Lastly, Jacksonville's showing me something, man.
Ooh, that's another thing we got to talk about.
And Trevor Lawrence has elevated his toughness to another level. We'll talk tomorrow. And Segs, I don't know right now who the best team in football is. It changes every week. We like the Rams at five, but the Seahawks are pretty good.
Yeah.
Your Chicago Bears are really friggin' good.
I'm not even ready to start talking about that yet.
Sure. I know, but we have to. Dude, we got two games left.
We can't do it. I can't put myself there.
I
know
understand.
Now they're in the playoffs, so I'm starting to get a little closer, but I can't even go there yet. It's only year one of Ben Johnson. That's all that's in my head right now. It's only
crazy.
Year one.
Crazy. What you'd really like right now is you'd like Matt Stafford's offense and the Texans defense, and you'll be pretty good. Other than a few big plays in Texans defense. Then you can put
that's the best team in football. The Rams offense and the Texans defense.
You haven't heard this in a while, Segs. The Bears are making an argument that they can beat anybody. When's the last time you heard that as a Chicago Bears fan?
They are. It's awesome. And the best part is they could still get a lot better in the next year. Bet of the day before we get out of here, Missouri at Illinois, college basketball, Illinois, a 10.5-point favorite. This is a good physical rivalry that we see every single year. They play in St. Louis. It's a fun game. This is tonight at 7:30. And I said a 10.5-point spread with Illinois favored. Illinois hasn't played their best lately, and Missouri's been pretty hot lately. I don't like that.
I like the confidence Missouri's playing with. I like Missouri.
Yeah, I would take Missouri and give me the points, but I think Illinois wins the game. And the 154.5, give me the over because we don't play defense in college basketball anymore. Michigan scored 100
points.
They
just watching the NBA.
The sixth. The Bulls and who they play? I don't even remember who. The Hawks, I think it was. 152 to 150 in regulation.
You know, we're getting to the point, Segs, in both college and the NBA, that even if you have no idea about gambling and you don't study trends or any of those things or talk to people that are smart, just take the over in every game. Yeah. And you'll probably, if you bet 10 games, if you're crazy enough to bet 10 games a weekend, bet them all. And you got a good chance of coming out on top and because you don't go broke taking a profit.
Right.
Bet equal money. I don't even know what the analytics say about how many times the overs hit in the NBA and college so far this year, but it sure feels like an inordinate amount. But it's no shock because you are what you hang around, and the college kids watch the NBA guys play, and we're at the shoot threes and do nothing else. And when you do that all the time, if you're not knocking them down, and when you are knocking them down, you get a 150-point regulation game where both teams score damn near 300 points in regulation. NBA All-Star game is what it is.
The Bulls had 9 players in double digits. 9.
Yeah.
Some teams don't even have a 9-man rotation. They had 9 players in double digits. That's how pathetic the defense is. And the Bulls aren't good.
It isn't getting any better. It's not
I'm
getting
a Bulls
any better.
Fan, as you can see, like the Bulls aren't good, and they scored 152 points. I mean, that's how bet down.
You roll out of bed and throw a buck 10, buck 20 on a team now with ease.
Oh, easy. Yeah. I mean, it's easy. All right. Like I said, we'll be back tomorrow with Coach JB. He'll join us right at the right off the jump of the show, and we'll ask him who the best team in the NFL is. Talk about Caleb Williams and the Bears. Talk about Shadur, and is he showing more maturity? And then we'll have Roy Jones Jr. on tomorrow as well, the legendary boxer, to talk about the Jake Paul stuff. What does he think about that? What does he think the state of boxing is at right now, plus more? Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey. Like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Sean, enjoy just kind of a night. We have Monday Night Football tonight. What's that?
49ers Colts. We're going to watch because we want to see what Philip Rivers does.
So, yeah, good game. And I kind of forgot about Monday Night Football. I'm so footballed out from the weekend of like four straight days of just so much football that I kind of forgot about Monday Night Football. But, yeah, we'll watch that. We'll get into that tomorrow and see what Philip Rivers does. See if he can stand up this time, not fall down.
Yep. And if you want to know how it's supposed to be two ways, because I'm a golf nut job, go watch Matt Kuchar walk up the 18th fairway with his son at the PNC tournament, because this is the first tournament his dad hasn't been in because his dad died in 2025, and they won it. They shot like 31 under par. And then go listen to, like my quote tweeted it, go listen to Lee Trevino with his kid talk about what golf and what sports meant to him. That's how we should all interview. And that's, I think, Lee Trevino's approach to life. Phenomenal stuff. If you're just looking for a little motivation and some feel good stuff, both of them will get you in your feels in a world that sometimes doesn't allow you to have some emotion. But from two dads, it was really cool at the same event at different times of the interview and for different reasons. So go with that. And we'll be back at it tomorrow, man. And happy holidays. You guys are stopping down to just enjoy a little bit of this and not get caught up in all the stuff. Remember to immerse yourself into others and to chase the things money can't buy. I beg for that in my life. And those are the two things that I'm trying to get better at all the time.
Yes, for sure. We'll be back 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central tomorrow. Same place, same time. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.